Hi, everyone, and thank you for listening to the Four Corners Crimecast. As you may already know, my name is Jake, and I'm here to let you know that the episode you are about to listen to contains content pertaining to crimes considerably more graphic than what is normally featured on this podcast. Names of some of the victims have been redacted in all publicly released information to protect their anonymity. For that reason, they will be referred to by their pronouns.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. We're going to go ahead and discuss some awful fucking shit today, and you're going to suck it into your ear holes and poop it out of your nose holes, because that's what happens when you listen to this bullshit.
Okay, I think we have to... Is that the advertisement for the episode? Can we cut out that whole section and pretend like it did not happen?
We can do that. The PP can cut that out in PP.
Yeah, the PP will cut that out in PP.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Four Corners Crimecast. My name is Jake.
My name is Rory.
And I'm your host, Katie. So before we start this episode today, I want to give everybody a pretty major content warning. We're going to be covering a lot of really disturbing and graphic sexual assault, rape of multiple women. There's some children involved. So if any of this is going to cause you any harm, we will advise you to turn it off before we get into the really bad shit.
And it's right off the bat that we're going to be getting into some pretty brutal stuff, right, Katie?
Yeah, it's right off the bat.
I hate that this guy's a fucking monster. What's his name again?
So his name is Mark Goudeau. What we're going to do, I'm going to kind of format this one a little differently than we normally will. We're not going to start with his life. We're actually going to start with his crimes, because I want everybody to kind of feel how Phoenix felt during this 13-month period and the just complete fear that they were wrapped into. It was chaos. There was the serial shooters that were active at the exact same time, arrested a month before this guy. So shit was going down. They had no way to get away from it.
Great.
No, not great.
It was not great.
Continuing on.
It was pretty terrible. So
yeah, so
buckle up, everybody, because this is going to be some...
Yeah, we did a brief breakdown before the episode.
That's where that silence came from.
Yeah, no, there's just it's not funny.
Not at all.
It is
there's
not
nothing
funny.
Funny in this episode. It's the man was a monster. It's the most brutal thing I've heard in a long time, and
it was close.
Yeah, if you have any issue with this, just know we are just giving you the facts, everything that we can give you. Katie did a lot of research. She had to put this through her brain, and it's still sitting in there, and we just want to get it out of there.
So she doesn't have to talk about it or think about it anymore.
Yeah, so yes. Prepare your ear holes.
As usual, yep. Fuck this guy.
And yeah, fuck this guy. All right, Katie, get into it. Sorry, don't mean to keep interjecting with that.
The Baseline Rapist 13-month crime spree begins on August 6th of 2005. In the late evening, three girls are walking down Baseline Road, and they are approached by a man who immediately pulls a gun on them. He forces them behind a church where they would be out of sight from nearby traffic. Two of the three girls are forced to perform oral sex on their attacker, and their names and ages are never released. Georgia Thompson had recently moved to Phoenix after struggling with her life in her hometown of Idaho. She previously worked as an exotic dancer and began a waitressing job at Hooters in Tempe near the Arizona State University campus. A month later, most likely tired of the drunk ASU frat boys in Hooters, she begins a new job dancing at a topless bar called Skin Cabaret. She developed a bad girl persona, nicknaming herself Felony. Not long after she starts working at the club, she asks her landlord to release her from her lease on her apartment because she was being stalked by an unknown man. The landlord declines, and she begins to stay with friends and avoid being alone in the apartment as much as possible. September 7th, Georgia goes to work at 8:50 p.m. It's a slow night, and she is cut and sent home early. She was not planning on staying at home that night. She was planning on staying with a friend, but he had fallen asleep and was not answering her phone calls. She has no choice but to return to her apartment. Around 12:30, two neighbors hear a female yelling, "Leave me alone," and what they thought was a car backfire. Not too long after that commotion, another neighbor leaves his apartment to go to a nearby convenience store. He walks through the parking lot and spots a woman lying on the ground. Assuming she had tripped or was drunk, he leans down and asks if she is okay. He gets no response and looks closer and discovers blood pooling around her. Emergency responders arrive to the scene and pronounce Georgia Thompson dead of a gunshot wound to the head. It's assumed she died instantly. Her wallet and cell phone are missing from her purse, and her killer is making calls from her phone. Before they are able to track it, he stops using it. There is a man in a Kentucky jail that confesses to her murder, but evidence does not add up, and it is filed as a false confession.
So they don't even know if this is actually the guy, or
did they find the phone?
No, they never found the phone. So far, nobody is really connecting these two things. It takes a lot more of this before everyone really starts to realize what's going on and that this is one person responsible.
Okay, so right now this is the baseline killer, though. Mm-hmm. It's not disputed that this was one of his first kills or something.
This was all him. Yeah, every single crime that we're going to go over was him, and it has been proven by DNA and other evidence after the fact.
Okay.
So 2 weeks later, on September 20th, two sisters aged 13 and 14 are walking home from a city park at around 10:30 p.m. The 14-year-old girl is pregnant at the time. They are approached by a man who pulls a gun on them and forces them into a secluded area behind some bushes. At gunpoint, they are forced to remove their clothing, and the 14-year-old points to her belly, begging the man not to hurt them. Ignoring her pleas, the man points the gun at the girl's belly and forces her 13-year-old sister to perform oral sex on him. He then slips on a condom and rapes the 14-year-old. After he ejaculates, he scoops up handfuls of dirt and rubs them where he had ejaculated on the girl to conceal any DNA evidence. He takes the used condom and leaves. After going to authorities, the girls are swabbed and semen is found on the clothes and breasts of the rape victim. The swabs are not tested and sit untouched in an evidence locker.
Why would they not test them?
It was just not priority. There's a lot of shit that Phoenix PD got for this case and the mishandling of evidence.
Yeah, so did they go back and test it?
They do, yeah. Okay, eventually they do.
And so this girl got some sort of justice out of this?
They both did, okay. Yeah. So, on September 28th, 8 days after the rape of the two young teens, a 36-year-old mother and her 12-year-old daughter are sitting in the parking lot of a fast food restaurant. Around 9:30 p.m., while they're waiting for someone inside, and unknown to them, a man jumps through the drive-thru window and steals a worker's purse. He leaps back out the window and spots the mother and daughter in their car. He pulls out his gun, gets into the car, and forces the mother to drive to a secluded area. Here, he sexually assaults the 12-year-old daughter and then forces the mother to the back seat and rapes her. And on November 3rd, after a month-long cooling-off period, a man wearing dreadlocks and a bucket hat enters a convenience store and robs the cashier of $720 at 8 p.m.
They were fake dreadlocks?
They were fake dreadlocks. So 9 minutes later, a woman is approached by the same man while she's placing clothes into a charity bin behind a grocery store. The man demands she give him a ride, and when she says no, he points the gun at her and says, "No, you're going to give me a ride." He drags her into the car and orders her to drive to a secluded area. When they arrive, he forces her to undress and perform oral sex on him. After he ejaculates, he makes her spit into her hands and rubs it over her body to destroy his DNA evidence.
Does that work? Like,
no.
I didn't think it does.
This guy's an idiot.
What about the dirt? Does the dirt work?
No.
Yeah.
So no matter what.
Yeah, this dumbass doesn't.
This guy, he's actually
he
like
he got
CSI.
Lucky because like nobody tested
everywhere.
It.
Yeah, he's just. Yeah, this guy just got fucking lucky because it's not like CSI in real life.
Except
I wish it
for
was.
This guy because he
this guy thought he was
everywhere.
Out. Yeah, he literally thought he was outsmarting people by rubbing dirt and
what a
spit
fucking
on him.
Moron.
So he's a fucking moron monster. That's the worst kind is a dumb monster.
So
if it weren't for just like complete like lack of giving a fuck, he should have gotten caught like pretty quick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is absolutely insane that he got away with so much even so far. Like this is, I mean, it's 2005. CSI had been on TV for 7 years already. You think they would have had their shit together by now?
They should have known that they were like, no, there's not cum everywhere, so they didn't even check.
So after the rape, he asks her about her family and insists that she give him his ID. He checks it and then tells her that he knows where she lives, that she has a child, and if she contacts the police, that her kid will be murdered.
Did she contact the police?
Yes. So after some pushing from, it was either her brother or her brother-in-law, she does contact police, and obviously nothing bad happens to her
child.
So
she was scared at first, so she didn't, like, go right to him?
Yeah, she did not go right to him. There was no mention of the DNA evidence from this crime itself, so I'm sure that it took a few days and she had obviously showered as you do
like
after
40
an event.
Times that
yeah.
evening.
So she did not provide any DNA evidence. So on November 7th, 4 days later, an armed man enters a Mexican restaurant near the convenience store that was robbed 4 days earlier, and he robs them. He goes to the Little Caesars Pizza next door, he robs customers, and the store itself. Outside, he robs four people at gunpoint and then flees, discharging his weapon as he runs. At this time, The Phoenix Police Department are finally beginning to realize that all of these acts are being committed by the same person.
This guy is so brazen. First, he robs the restaurant, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then he goes outside and robs four more people in the parking lot?
He robs one restaurant, goes next door, robs a bunch of people, and robs that restaurant. And then he goes outside and robs four more people.
So,
and then he just runs away. Like, nobody's called the cops yet.
So what?
How? Yeah. How do you rob four people at once?
Yeah,
no
like,
one
that's
was like, hey, stop,
this,
sir.
This is Arizona. I'm surprised no one shot his ass during this whole thing. But
you have to just be so shocked, though, in that
when
you're there and that's just happening, someone has a gun pointed at you, you're not going to pull out a gun and shoot them before they're going to shoot you first if they've got a gun pulled already.
Yeah, and that's just scary. He doesn't have like a proper fear response. Like, he's not afraid to do the stupidest shit. Like, and he keeps getting away with it. Like, his whole thing is he goes in and he robs a store that's four blocks away or less than that away from the place he just robbed.
Yeah.
Then he goes and he robs the store next door and the people inside the store, then goes out into the fucking parking lot. Like, how long did that take? You're looking at a 10-minute robbery. Why, after the first person was robbed, where were the police?
Yeah.
Did he do the restaurant Pulp Fiction style?
All right, honey bunny, calm down.
So after the Phoenix Police Department begin to realize that these are all connected and the same person, he is officially dubbed the Baseline Rapist. So on December 12th, a man working at a self-owned catering business washing dishes hears a loud bang outside. He assumes it is teenagers banging on the dumpster and goes out back to catch them. Instead, he makes eye contact with a man holding a gun standing over the lifeless body of a woman. The gun is turned on him, and he runs back inside his business and calls 911. When the police arrive, the man is gone, and the woman is identified as Tina Washington. They believe that she was abducted from a nearby bus station after leaving her job at a preschool and taken to the area where she was killed. When she resisted his attempts to rape her, she was shot in the head and killed, exactly like Georgia Thompson.
So when this guy takes them to a secluded area, what is his definition of secluded? Like, where are all these?
Just with nobody in it?
Basically. Yeah, as long as he thinks that nobody's there, then that's his definition of secluded.
With a shrubbery, like
behind a building.
I sat down on Broadway that one night at 3 a.m.
Yeah, the place beside the main road that was not hidden at all.
Basically, that's exactly what he does.
So the guy called the cops, and the cops showed up.
He was gone.
He was gone. Long gone. Like, I don't imagine it could be that long. There's got to be a cop somewhere around there.
The thing with him, though,
5 minutes.
Is he actually wore disguises for basically every one of his crimes.
So he had intention of doing this when he left the house.
Yes.
What kind of disguises?
Ski masks. He would wear Halloween masks.
So, like,
he would
boring,
wear his
basic
dreadlocks.
Shit. He didn't get that into it.
Yeah, basically. Just something to cover his face. Tina was 39, and she left behind 3 sons. On the morning of February 20th, 2006, the bodies of Romelia Vargas, 38, and Myrna Palma Roman, 24, were found on the floor of their snack truck, dead from gunshot wounds. There were no witnesses or evidence left behind. A man named Terry Wayne Smith, with a long history of violent crime and stalking, was originally suspected. He was investigated, and his mother told police she believed that he could be the Baseline Rapist. The deaths of Romelia and Myrna could not be connected to him, and he was basically forgotten.
His own mom said that he could be the Baseline Rapist.
His own mother.
And this was the Godot guy, right? Godot?
No, this is a different guy.
No, the ones that actually killed him was Godot.
Yeah.
But Terry was not.
Terry was not.
But he was still obviously not a good person.
He was just a really
terrible
fucking person as well, but not as terrible
so
as the guy that actually killed
him. So Terry's mom turned him in thinking he was the Baseline Rapist, but they had evidence that proved that he wasn't.
Yeah, basically. They didn't have any evidence of the crime scene, so I think if they had something that could have maybe possibly pointed to this guy, it would have been put on him. But eventually, once they realize that everyone's being shot with the same gun, they kind of realize that it wasn't Terry.
Do we know what kind of gun that is?
It was a 380, because the shell casings are left behind at most of the crime scenes, but he very carefully got rid of the gun before he was arrested. So
it was not a revolver. Right?
Yeah, so it'd be a semi-automatic, probably.
Popping out those casings.
Yeah, so, okay.
So in the same area as the robberies and rapes committed in November, the body of Chow Choi is found at 9 p.m. on March 14th. He's dead from a gunshot wound to the head after leaving work to drive his coworker, Liliana Sanchez Cabrera, to her home. The next morning, her body is found in the parking lot of a restaurant 1 mile away.
two people died right now?
Mm-hmm.
So the first one was
this
a dude.
The first one.
And the second one right now.
It was just a man that. It was a coworker, but it was a man that got in the way.
So this is the first. So this is the first guy.
The first
he's killed.
And only man he's killed.
So and only that's the man. Thing is okay. Like he killed. He probably killed that guy in front of her, mm-hmm. right? And then took her.
When she resisted, he.
And it was to a restaurant parking lot a mile away.
A mile away.
That's absolutely insane.
And it was in Choi's car.
So it was in her car.
It was in his car.
Oh, his car. Okay.
So he, I'm assuming, we don't know exactly a lot of these people.
So it was just like a carjacking. He just killed
testify.
The guy. Okay.
I mean, I'm assuming he saw the girl leaving and going to a car. And then when he approached the car to force her in and make her drive, there was a man already in the car. So he shot the man.
Pulled
and
him
then
out of the car.
Pulled him out of the car, left him in that parking lot, forced her into the car. She resisted.
Dang.
Shot her in the head and left her a mile away. But that's just my assumption.
So she didn't get taken to that spot and killed. Like, they don't know.
We don't know. Okay. No. He never.
Did he leave the car there?
Yeah.
He just left the car there with the body inside.
Mm-hmm.
And no evidence left there.
No mm-hmm. evidence. He wore gloves. He wore masks. He did
so
it at night.
So he went from spewing everywhere to being, like, no evidence? Like,
well, these are just murders. Like,
yeah.
He's not, his intention isn't rape at this point. He's just out on
The
okay.
police think that his intention is rape,
but
if
anyone
they,
resists,
if
they just
resist
die.
Too much, then
okay.
they get shot in the head and they're killed.
So he's out looking to rape. He's out hunting, and it's just he's escalated from letting them walk
away
to
if they
shooting
fire,
them in the head. If yeah, he,
mm-hmm.
even if they don't, I'm assuming has it just been all murders up to this point? Is he been doing rapes in between?
Well,
has he like actually gotten
two girls?
Well, I mean, in between these murders that we have, are there any instances of the previous where if they go along with him, they live?
Mm-hmm.
Like, so he's there the in between these murders.
He does either
that.
Or. He either rapes
okay.
them and lets them go, or he rapes them, or he doesn't rape them and he shoots them and kills them.
Okay, so it's 50-50 for him, like
mm-hmm.
it doesn't really matter.
Just
it's
on
just
how it goes, probably, or
yeah.
how he feels.
Yeah. So, but he's going out with intention. So,
mm-hmm.
oh
okay.
yeah.
All right.
Fuck this guy.
For real, fuck this guy.
On March 29th, the owner of a pool service business pulls around the back of his house that he used as an office. He finds drag marks and blood on the gravel. The police are called, but unable to find anything. April 4th, the man once again arrives to his business, but notices an awful smell. His dog runs to a space between the house and storage shed. As he approaches, he sees an arm and a leg. He immediately contacts police, who uncover the body of 26-year-old Kristen Nicole Gibbons, dead from a gunshot wound to the head. The police use the shell casing of a .380 found to match Gibbons, Choi, Sanchez Cabrera, and Washington to the same killer, who is now known as the Baseline Killer. April 10th, Sofia Nunez is found dead in her bathtub by her 7-year-old son of a gunshot wound to the head. Because she was killed in her own home, the Baseline Killer is not immediately connected to her murder, and the only evidence found is DNA on her body.
So at this point, they connected the Baseline rapist to the Baseline Killer, or
mm-hmm.
they thought they were two separate people?
No, they thought they were the same person. He was originally dubbed the Baseline Rapist, but once he started killing people, they named him the Baseline Killer.
So they just
changed his. And that one kind of stuck more, yeah.
Okay.
At 9 p.m. on May 1st, a woman is abducted in her car at gunpoint by a man in a rubber Halloween mask. She's ordered to a secluded area very close to the Mexican restaurant Little Caesars robbed in November and raped. The police finally come forward on May 5th and publicly announce that all of the crimes are connected to one man, the Baseline Killer. A composite from one of his surviving victims is created and posted all over Phoenix.
I remember that because where my parents live, you get Phoenix News Channel 3.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all over the news, this dude's, the sketch of him.
And the dreadlocks and the hat.
So, now, is this all around his home? Or is
mm-hmm.
this just, like, his house is nearby? Did they even, like, did they look through that area? Like, what's the connection with this area? Is it just a place that he walks through every day? Or why did he choose the spots that he did so close to each other? It's just his hunting ground or what?
Basically, yeah. He's near his home. And we'll get into that when we get into his life. But he's pretty close. Especially this last one that he commits, he is minutes away from his actual house.
So he would walk to this area, I'm assuming, and then run home.
Probably.
It's like he literally wanted to get caught or something. Like
yeah.
How
it went
so long is just insane.
Yeah.
So in his final crime, the Baseline Killer attacks minutes away from his own home. 37-year-old Carmen Miranda is abducted from a car wash at 29th Street and Thomas Road. She's caught on security cameras being forced into her car by a man with dreadlocks and a bucket hat. Police arrive only minutes later, but they are too late. Miranda is found only 100 yards away in her car, dead from a gunshot wound to the head.
The police showed up and they were too late, and she was 100 yards away.
Mm-hmm. She was in a barbershop parking lot 100 yards away from the car wash.
That's the most crazy shit I've ever heard. It was across the street or anything? How did nobody see this?
I'm not sure. There's really nothing. All right, so now we're going to move on from the crimes of the Baseline Rapist and get more into the life and the arrest of him. So a man named Mark Goudeau has always been on the Baseline Task Force's suspect list, and he was never really heavily looked into by them. He was born on September 6, 1964 in Phoenix, Arizona, and he was the second youngest of 13, born to Willie and Alberta Goudeau. His father, Willie, worked as a lot attendant at a car dealership on Camelback Road, and Alberta was a maid. So it's difficult to know exactly what kind of childhood he lived, because some of his siblings claim that the household was peaceful and idyllic, and others claim that Willie was extremely strict, verbally abusive, and an alcoholic.
So it's just a 50-50 split on the family, or what? It's
basically. Just... out of 13 kids, some of them are like, oh, it was great, kids. I loved it. And some of them are like, Willie was an asshole and beat the shit out of us.
And so, Willie's the father, obviously, right?
Yeah, Willie Goudeau was the father of everybody.
Was it a 6'7 or a 7'6?
We're not sure. I have no idea. I know he's got a lot of brothers, but I'm not sure exactly how many.
Okay, and so at this point, that's all we know of him.
Of his childhood, yeah. So. Okay. Eventually, Willie and Alberta divorced, and Alberta died in 1976 when Mark was 12. So Mark and his brother Marvin attended Corona del Sol High in Tempe, Arizona, and they played football there. Eventually, Marvin moved on to playing football in college, and Mark never graduated because he didn't have enough credits. So we're going to get into some of his crimes that he committed when he was actually younger. So on November 7th, 1982, when Mark was 18, him and one of his brothers were arrested for the rape of a young woman. She did not want to go forward with their prosecution, and the charges were actually dropped off of both of their records.
Him and who?
His brother Marvin.
Oh. So they're both kind of rapists.
Mm-hmm.
So does Marvin play in later in the story, or is it just...
This is just the only brother I could ever find mentioned that...
Okay, but they both went out and did this. Now, is he older or younger?
That they also did not mention, so I'm not sure if this was something that kind of was instilled into Mark Goudeau, or if...
Like he had just seen the action and repeated it, or...
Yeah.
Interesting.
So 5 years later, in 1987, Mark is arrested for trespassing during a bar argument. A year after that, in 1988, he's arrested for driving under the influence. And this year, he also meets his soon-to-be wife named Wendy Carr in a nightclub. In 1989, Mark is charged with aggravated assault, sexual assault, and kidnapping of a young woman. She says that Mark abducted her, raped her, tried to force cocaine up her nose, beat her with a barbell and a shotgun, threw her into a bathtub, then beat her again in the parking lot, which I'm assuming this was at a hotel. He also chased two witnesses away, and he claims that she willingly performed oral sex on him, and they were about to take a bath together when two men knocked on the door and raped and beat the woman while they were holding Mark at gunpoint. He pled no contest to his charges.
And no contest means that he doesn't, like, it could or could not be true? Like, mm-hmm.
Basically.
He's just going to do the time for it?
Yeah. So it's, I'm not guilty, and I'm also not guilty.
Yeah.
So.
Not the way that should work.
Yeah. Anyway, so he beat this lady to within a half inch of her life.
Basically.
And he claims that two people came in and did it.
He's
at gunpoint.
And he wants to say he's innocent, but I'm assuming his lawyer told him.
So how did
not
that pan
plead.
Out for him?
Yeah, so where did the story come from? That's just what he said happened, and so he took the no contest charge.
This is all court public record. You can do an inmate search on him and you can find all of this.
Okay.
His earlier charges, cuz this, I mean, was his exact same MO as all of his other crimes as the Baseline rapist and Baseline killer.
Yeah, that forcing the oral is kind of like his spotlight there, I guess.
Taking her to parking lots.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, continue.
So while he was waiting to be sentenced, he pulled a gun on a Fry's cashier and robbed her of around $850 and then forced her and other employees into the parking lot. So again, same MO.
That's a lot of money to be carrying on you.
Well, that's at a Fry's.
Oh, probably just cash the check.
Well, he what? Robbed the fries.
He didn't. The cashier.
He robbed the cashier. Not
oh,
the...
I thought he robbed someone walking out of the fries.
No.
No.
He got the cashier.
He made them
he
walk
went in the
out
store
of
this
the
time.
Fries.
Yeah, he went in the store. He robbed the fries and then made how many people? Four people wander out, or does it say?
It just says other employees. I don't know how many.
So he likes to go in, rob places, and come out, and sometimes rob the parking lot too.
Yes.
Basically, he just loves the parking lot. He loves parking lots.
Parking
he's
lots.
A parking lot
he's
bandit.
He's just such a piece
of
shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, he parking lots are his bread and butter. Like, that's where he, A, makes his money, and B, satisfies himself sexually.
So he tells his probation officer that he needed the money for his crack habit, which is not confirmed that he even had a crack habit, so I think it was just a bunch of bullshit. But he was sentenced to 15 years for the assault of the woman and not the rape, and then another 21 for the robbery. So
he was basically sentenced to prison for like 30-something years, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what the fuck happened?
Yeah, did he just recently get released or something when all of the,
yeah.
the
so,
terrible stuff starts happening?
In 91, while he's in prison, he marries his wife, Wendy, in a jailhouse ceremony. She buys a house in 1995, which is located at East Thomas and North 32nd, which is just north of Baseline Road. So in 2004, after he serves 13 years as a model prisoner, Mark is released on parole and moves into the home that Wendy bought. He begins a job as a construction worker, where he is said to work 10-hour days, leaving before sunrise and going to bed by 8 p.m. His first month on the job, he was awarded Employee of the Month.
So this guy's just a product of routine, basically, it seems like. He can actually function when he has his day set out for him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, imagine being his supervisor.
But it's actually very common for people that are in prison for sexual assault to reform themselves and come out like a person of God, or they found a purpose in their life, or they became a better person. Usually as they come out of prison, they're said by family members to be totally different.
A lot of people and find Jesus in prison,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. So with this guy, though, I mean, there is a thing about prisoners being fairly good at, like, trade craft and stuff
mm-hmm.
because they can actually, the repetition helps them because they're so used to it. Like, military and prisoners have, like, that thing in common where repetition doesn't, like, bother them like other people because that's how they lived their life. And it actually works out better for him and stuff like that. But
mm-hmm.
it's just really weird that he comes out and he gets Employee of the Month. He works 10-hour days without complaining. And
supposedly.
Yeah.
So,
but it's still easy to see. But like Roy
yeah,
said,
like that's understandable.
He fell into a routine, and for a minute, everything
yeah.
was good.
And then so what brought about the escalation from there?
So between 2004 and 2005, he lives a completely uneventful life, going to work, blah, blah, blah. And it isn't until August and September of 2006 that we actually learn about the second life that he was leading as the Baseline Killer. Goudeau's parole officers contact the Baseline Police Force in August to let them know that he looks strikingly like the sketch of the Baseline Killer that has been going around Phoenix. And since Mark is on parole, his home is completely open to being searched by his parole officers whenever they seem fit and whenever the time strikes, whenever they want to. Their initial search, they uncover a ski mask and a toy handgun in their home. And during the same month, the swabs taken from the assault and rape of the 13 and 14-year-old sisters is sent to a lab for testing.
So how many years after that crime occurred were they sent to the lab for testing?
So the assault occurred in 2005 and in August of 2006, so pretty much a year.
Okay.
As soon as this comes back, I'm pretty sure they actually sent it out to the Arizona Department of Public Safety, and the Phoenix Police Department didn't even do the testing themselves.
Okay.
But we have to remember that DNA was still pretty new back in 2005, 2006.
Right, yeah. They weren't catching people off Ancestry.com back then.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
When the DNA is sent back, it comes back from the lab and it actually matches Mark, who gave up his DNA when he's arrested. On September 6th of 2006, which is his 42nd birthday, he is arrested as the Baseline Killer, and they connect everything to him.
How did they make that connection? That seems like there's a bit, they just put it together like after the
when they searched his home and they found the ski mask, which the Baseline Killer was known to wear a ski mask during his crimes.
Okay.
The parole officer said, this dude looks exactly the fuck like your composite. I think it might be him. And then three the DNA comes back off of these two girls that were brutally raped and matches him to a T.
So they probably just had like an idea and then
exactly.
A hint,
and like I said,
then,
he had been
boom,
on their
the DNA matches.
Been on their suspect list a long time. He just wasn't really their top 10.
Okay, so they just didn't even check him out until this guy came forward and said, this looks like him. But they didn't find the actual gun or anything?
No, they never found the gun. They did find, when they actually finally obtained a legitimate search warrant and not just parole officers searching his home, they find blood evidence on multiple pairs of his shoes from people being shot at close range and a small bag of jewelry that belonged to Tina Washington that was missing from her body when she was found in the parking lot.
That'll do it.
Yeah.
So just to get back to it, the DNA that he gave on his original arrest was well before any of the baseline activity started,
It had
started,
always
right?
been on file, but the swab was never tested until right before his arrest.
So it's not like he would have had any reason not to, I mean, essentially not to give his DNA back that far back. Because
and
he
did
wasn't
again.
A murderer, he was just a criminal.
And he's always stood by the fact that he's innocent, so he's given his DNA as many times as they've asked for it and his fingerprints. And
now, is that the only crime that the DNA connected him to besides, and that in the jewelry was Tina Washington? So they have him for two.
They had the blood evidence on the shoes, which I believe was from Choi and Sanchez Cabrera. More DNA that's collected from the breasts of Sofia Nunez finally comes back from the lab, and Goudeau is test positive.
Okay,
as
he's a match.
Killer as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so they somewhat knew each other, Nunez and Goudeau, which wasn't really figured out in the first place, but eventually it came out that they were sort of friends, sort of not friends. Kind of on the weird side. She kind of thought he was stalking her. It's really...
Well, stalking is kind of his MO, isn't it? Yeah. Like, that's where it kind of all started.
Do we know if he was, like, a regular where she worked, or...
We don't know. She really...
She just kind of had a bad feeling about him from
had
multiple
no background.
Interactions.
Yeah. It's most all of the information that we have about his capture and about his crimes comes from his rape victims that he let go and not from the people that were murdered, because most of the people that were murdered, he really left no evidence besides his 380 shells. After his arrest, Goudeau was indicted on 19 counts for the sexual assault, rape, and kidnapping of the 13 and 14-year-old sisters. And by the end of September, he is facing more than 90 charges, 9 of those for murder, and he is officially announced as the baseline killer.
So they got him.
They got him.
Well, they got their guy. They know who they're looking for, right?
They know exactly.
And
what
was the trial like? Did the women come forward and testify for this man?
They
or
did.
Against this man, not for him. Oh, my God. Against this man?
Wait, so they went and got him straight up, or they had to go find him?
Well, they had arrested him at his house, right?
Yeah, they arrested him directly in front of his home.
Okay, yeah. Right.
Because his last crime... So if you remember, I said that he was living at Thomas and 32nd.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, at his old lady's house.
Where she bought the house. Okay.
With Wendy. So
he's still with her at this time, correct?
Oh, he's still with her to
2006.
This day.
Oh, he's still with her? She's stuck by him?
Oh, yes. So,
ooh, that's crazy.
So, yeah, so he's living, him and Wendy's house is at 32nd and Thomas. And if you remember, his last crime was at 29th and Thomas. So he is, like, literally just a couple streets down when he kills that girl at the car wash.
Yeah, so... That's why when it was 100 yards away, he could get home before anybody could come find him. So that makes sense. That's absolutely insane, though. Talk about, like, hunting in your own backyard or whatever.
Yeah.
Like,
that's
absolutely
insane.
You're
not supposed to do that.
Yeah, that's what serial killers do, though. Serial killers are always...
Well, it's like what Hannibal Lecter said. What's the first thing we do? We covet.
Yeah, but, I mean, if you look way, way back into the... old FBI, like, original BAU and their profiling unit, the first thing they noticed is that they had a comfort zone and they never stepped outside of that. So serial killers are more likely to kill where they're comfortable, which generally is around where they live.
Okay, so he was just, because he knew the area, he knew how to get away.
He knew
that
how
was
to get
his
home.
His
he
grounds.
Knew where the alleys were. He knew
where people
hidden.
Would be. Yeah, he seemed like he actually... knew a little bit of where he was going and stuff like that.
Yeah. So in January of 07, he is indicted on 74 more counts, which ranges from...
74?
Yeah, so he's got... So this is after the police kind of go through and, as they do, drop charges that they don't think will stand up in court. So he is standing on 74 counts, which range from murder, sexual assault, to robbery. And in July, he goes to trial for the rape of the two sisters, and they actually testify against him, which I would not be wanting to sit in that trial, because I bet that was fucking brutal to sit through.
Yeah, those poor little girls, and I mean, more power to him from facing him. Like, yeah. That's absolutely, like, the strength of that shows is absolutely insane that they could sit there in the same room with this fucking monster. Like, and they both looked at him dead in the eye and just said what they needed to say, or...
Yep. Yep, and he is sentenced to 438 years for those 19 counts against only those two girls. He serves 4 years, and he is finally taken back to court in 2011 for all of the Baseline Killer crimes, which is the 74 counts that he was officially indicted on. He's found guilty of all 9 murders, which some of you may know is incredibly rare for serial killers. Usually there's a couple that get dropped. They don't get charged.
Right, because it's too hard to charge someone with that many murders in one case, right?
Every murder that they committed, yeah. There's usually not enough evidence on one or two that they just can't convict him for. But he got convicted for everyone.
Yeah, or the defense can actually create something mm-hmm. to defend against it.
Like. But yeah.
And I mean, the majority of this was based on actual DNA evidence and whatnot anyways, right?
Yeah, and his strikingly similar MO on every single fucking crime that he committed.
Yeah, and within his comfort zone, too. I mean, did they actually bring the FBI in for the Baseline Killer, or was it just local PD did all this?
No, it was strictly Phoenix Police Department.
Oh, good on them. Like, that's, I mean, it took a year of him doing this, but they got him. I mean, imagine how long that spree or that murder, like, just drive he had would go on, because he's getting more and more brazen closer and closer to his house.
Yeah, and he had started it in 88 when he was in his 20s. He just got sent to prison for those 13 years that stopped him from doing it for 14 years.
Yeah.
And did the trial happen in Phoenix or in the area, or did they have to send it somewhere else, because, you know, obviously it was a pretty well-known case?
That I didn't find, but I'm pretty sure it did happen in Phoenix. He was held in Phoenix. He's always been in the Arizona penal system.
So is he up at the Supermax in Florence right now?
I think he's in Florence, yeah.
Good. Stay there, you piece of shit.
Or die.
Either one. The world will be a better place without
you. He's probably in solitary. No one can get him with that fucking shiv.
Yeah, he's on death row.
Good.
But anyways.
We're going to get to that, I'm guessing.
Yeah. At least it's going to be a short walk for him, I hope.
Short drop and a sudden stop.
So on top of his 9 murder charges, he is convicted on 58 other charges and sentenced to death 9 times on November 30th, 2011, which, happy birthday to me, he got sentenced to death on my birthday.
Everything happens on your birthday.
On my birthday, yeah, I know.
You just have a weird birthday.
I guess so.
It's just the day that they like to do things. Okay, so he gets convicted.
If I ever die on November 30th.
It's Katie's fault. So he gets convicted on the 30th of November.
Mm-hmm. 2011.
Has he actually put out any appeals to...
He's got mandatory appeals that he's gone through, because in Arizona you have to appeal.
Yeah, you have to appeal the death penalty. Yeah,
so he's gone in front of the Supreme Court and they're like, fuck you.
Good.
Go back to prison. Good. So he's never going to win any of his appeals.
Does he have a date yet or anything? Or is we're just keeping him? He's just been in there for 8 years now.
Yeah,
and we've
just been keeping him
paying for his ass.
Been sitting there. He's always and will probably always not admit to committing any of these crimes. He is very adamant that he is 100% innocent and that he was not involved in any way.
Can he appeal each charge separately, or does he have, like, because imagine if you have 58 plus 9, you've got like 67 charges or something, and then each one gets an appeal, he could be there forever. He could die before he gets the death penalty, right?
I mean, he's going to die before he gets put to death.
Just as that many.
Because you think so?
That's how any court system works. We hardly ever put anyone to death anymore unless they've been sitting there since the 60s.
Kind of sometimes hope, you know, I'm not really a huge proponent of the death penalty, but sometimes I kind of feel like there needs to be an express lane, like just a real quick shot to hell for some of these bastards.
Not
like
that quick. Fucking,
no, I'm
like
pretty
quick
sure.
To the chair, slow in the chair.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It's just...
So, but no, I have a feeling, I mean, he's 51 now, I believe, so he's pretty fucking close to... He's got 20 years, and they're not going to put him to death and be done with his appeals.
How old is
in
he,
51? I think he's 51 now.
Well, he's going to live past 71 probably, unless he gets shivved.
No, I'm pretty sure he's going to get it.
And then he's...
I mean, if they don't outlaw the death penalty again, this guy is a prime candidate. So
yeah.
If they can clear all those appeals real quick.
It just depends on how long. I mean, if you look at it, it took him 4 years to go to court for the baseline killings and the baseline rape cases. So if it took him 4 years to only go to court and then another couple months to be sentenced for those... We don't know how long he's going to be sitting in that prison cell on death row.
Well, it can't be long enough for me. I mean, it's just that dude's an asshole.
As long as he's there, then okay.
I honestly don't believe that he didn't do this. Like, I don't believe him at all.
No, but his wife does.
Well, there are people in this world that don't ever see the bad in people, I guess. Like, she might be one of those people, or she just is a willfully ignorant person.
I think she is. She said that they spent every waking moment together when he was not at work and he didn't have any time to go commit these crimes, and they were the happiest they ever were as soon as he got out of prison.
So she doesn't think there was any, like, crime time.
No, she doesn't. No, and she also thinks that he was convicted on a bunch of junk science, which... Like I said, DNA was still
junk science,
kind
garbage.
Of young back then.
That's like 98% matches that they get on people and stuff like that.
So that's interesting, garbage. Though. Like, she's trying to claim that it was early. How early was it? Was that a plausible case, or is she just full of shit?
No, she's full of shit. She just wants to believe that he's innocent because he said she's innocent. I don't doubt that there was some sort of psychological abuse, maybe some Stockholm
some sort of
going
a,
on
like attachment
there.
To mm-hmm. him, like, well, he loved me through this, or I stuck by him through
prison. I put this much time into him, so I have to continue putting the time
so
into him.
I just
him.
Don't understand, because, I mean, his first convictions were, I mean...
They were bad, and he met her right before, a year before he did that.
You don't know this person well enough. Like, yeah, you wrote to him in prison, but... The man is obviously like a crazy person or a psychopath or some sort of he has like some sort of weird torture power thing, rape mm-hmm. thing that he obviously had to have hidden from her, which would be really easy from his prison behind a piece of paper. I mean, he was only out for 2 years, so.
Yeah, and if he's working sunrise to sunset, he can be out however late he wants doing this shit.
I'll personally tell you, since I work sunrise to sunset, that that's way more than 10 hours in the summer, at least in Arizona. So I don't know. There's probably a lot of time that he was unaccounted for there if he was gone from sunrise to sunset.
Yeah, and it's actually physically impossible to be with someone that long unless mm-hmm. they're like a child. Like, you can't be with someone 24/7 when they're not at work. That just doesn't work out. Like,
yeah. So I think she just has some sort of weird commitment to this guy, and she will never believe and never face the facts that he is 100% guilty and a huge piece of fucking shit.
Yeah. So fuck this guy.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and say that Baseline Killer is one of the most brutal things I have heard in a long time.
I was shocked doing the research for this because I heard about this when it was going on and I had no clue it was this bad.
Yeah, because that's all really brutal stuff. And he's in prison where he belongs. I hope he stays there for the rest of his life. Hope it's a little shorter than most people get because he doesn't really deserve to be around very much any longer, I don't think. But anyway, I digress. So, guy's in prison. He's a horrible human being. I'm glad he's off. Baseline Killer caught.
Probably going to die before he actually gets the chair.
Maybe. But he's in there. He's sitting on death row. Phoenix police did an okay job connecting all of this. And
so.
I mean, they the trial, I mean, him getting charged for all the counts in a serial case is probably the biggest thing that they had enough proof to do that.
If anything, that has to be
the death penalty.
Yeah,
I mean,
they just could have caught him a lot sooner if they had done some things differently. So I'll give him a 5 out of 10.
But if anything, like Rory said, the fact that they got 9 convictions has to at least attest to the fact that they at least preserved the evidence that they were given.
Mm-hmm.
They did as much as they could to actually bring justice to him. I mean, they didn't stop
the
crimes.
There was cum everywhere.
Yeah, they didn't stop the crimes. They may have slacked a little bit on running DNA tests and stuff, but that's the nature of the beast in 2005, 2006. But they got him. That's the most important thing. Because imagine if he had continued on something like this
if
for the
story
next
was going differently.
10 years, or he moved to another place, or moved to another city, and
another four corner state.
Yeah, got comfortable up in Utah somewhere.
Ogden.
Yeah, so I mean, that's I mean, I'm glad they got him.
Yeah.
And it sucks that it took so long and he had to kill so many people and rape so many people before they got him, but I'm glad they got him.
True that.
All right, guys, are we going to call it on the baseline on that one?
I think we are. I just want to shout out the book that I read and did all my research on, which was The Naked Streets by Ronald Watkins. And I also have to give a shout out to Calista Gonzalez for her artwork. And you can find her at Dreamwild Graphics on Instagram or email her at dreamwildphotography@gmail.com if you need any graphic art done.
Yeah, it's really cool. She's really good. Thank you.
Hell yeah, she made us a font so we didn't have copyright problems.
Yeah, avoiding prison one copyright at a time.
I do not want to go to Florence with this motherfucker.
I won't get Florence for that.
No, you'll probably just get,
if anything, she'll get arrested.
He'll get sent up. Yeah, it was all her. Okay, so that was your research. That was based, and now there's also going on at this time. We forgot to really touch on this.
We touched on it in the beginning. The Phoenix serial shooters were 100% active and killing during the time of the baseline.
And we're gonna touch on them in a couple episodes, right?
Yeah, we're gonna talk about them and get into more of that. But just remember, Phoenix was an absolute shit show and a terrifying place in 2005 and 2006. You did not want to be there. It's pretty bad. It's got one of the higher crime rates. But, I mean, at this time, two serial killers on the loose is...
Yeah, that's insane. Like, just...
You could compare us to Wisconsin, which nobody wants to be compared to Wisconsin.
I don't know.
We love we love Wisconsin, except the Vikings are better than the Packers.
We love Wisconsin for their true crime.
Yeah, you guys have some of the good stuff. So, yeah, congratulations, Wisconsin. We tried for one, like a year,
2005 to 2006.
Phoenix, Arizona was basically hot Wisconsin.
There's a lot less cheese.
Wisconsin with no cheese and no ice.
It's all just sweaty butt cheese up there. Like,
but it's icy
so
cheese
hot.
In the winter.
It's icy
butt cheese.
No, I mean, I'm talking about in Phoenix. Like, it's so sweaty up there that every, like... 30 steps, you've just plopped out a curd somewhere.
Well, especially during monsoon season, I will say that.
Yeah, I'm a
nice dry heat, my butt crack will stay fairly warm, although I am quite the sweater.
See, that's the thing, is I can do a dry heat. I can do the 115. I can be working outside fine if there's no humidity. As soon as it gets about 20% humidity, I turn into like a crying little sweaty baby.
1.5% humidity is what it takes for my butt crack to turn to water.
Well, see... That's the thing is that, like, I feel... Never mind. Let's just end it on a high note there.
So anyways, guys, move to Arizona. It's a really lovely place if you like to be sweaty all the time.
If you like to be sweaty and you want to be from where the place those crazy 2005, 2006 serial killers roamed the world, feel free.
Just move to Tucson. It's a less populated murder city.
This is also
right
true.
On the border.
Right on
We've
the border.
We've got the good cartel murders.
That, yeah, okay.
All right, guys. Well, thank you for listening, and I hope you come back next week. Have a good one.